We now broadcast the 28th chapter or episode in our ongoing historical series, where we look at the lives and legends of the people and places that went into the making of the Vatican throughout the centuries. The programme is written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. Today's episode takes us back to the beginning of the 16th century, and we learn what prompted Julius II to institute the Swiss Guards, and why he decided upon the demolition of the old St. Peter's Basilica.
Chapter 28. Might and Magnificence.
The modern era was fast approaching. Life no longer moved at a leisurely pace, conditioned by the seasons. Time had become precious.
As the Renaissance advanced, the alarm clock, first made in 1410 by Brunelleschi, was joined by the wristwatch, a logical development in an age which celebrated the individual.
Information and knowledge were becoming ever more rapidly diffused. By the beginning of the 16th century, the print shops of Europe numbered 1,000.
At the turn of the century, the three men who were to dominate the art of their age were in Florence: Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, and young Raphael of Urbino.
Advances in medicine and science continued. In Rome, in the year 1500, was Nicholas Copernicus, who lectured very successfully on mathematics.
Studying Greek in Oxford was Erasmus of Rotterdam, the most famous humanist of the time and amused chronicler of men's follies.
Discovery and colonization were flourishing. In April 1500, Pedro Cabral claimed Brazil for Portugal. The following year, Columbus discovered Nicaragua.
In the Jubilee year of 1500, it's recorded that 200,000 people crowded into St. Peter's Square to receive the Pope's Easter blessing. But the Borgias' time was running out.
On the feast of Saints Peter and Paul in the year 1500, the ceiling of the Pope's dining room collapsed, and Alexander VI narrowly escaped with his life. It seemed a bad omen.
In the August of 1503, the city of Rome was hot and humid, and malaria was rife. When a large Borgia cardinal died, Pope Alexander VI, who was stout himself, was heard to observe, "This month is a bad one for fat people." And so it was. On the 18th, he died of a fever and was hastily buried the next day. His son, Cesare, sent his men to lock the papal apartments and carry off the treasure, which was hidden in Alexander's study.
No one thought to carry off another, far more valuable treasure, displayed in St. Peter's in full view of all and with no protection whatsoever. Michelangelo's Pietà, completed 4 years earlier, a commission from a French cardinal.
Alexander's successor was Julius II, called the greatest pope since Innocent III and the saviour of the papacy. And if he's celebrated for his stormy relationship with Michelangelo, he's surely remembered more than anything else for one massive enterprise, the rebuilding of St. Peter's.
It was to take over a century, and almost every major architect in 16th century Rome had a hand in designing it.
But it was Julius who took the decision to demolish the old church. After 12 centuries of life, and despite constant renovation, it was in a shaky state. And now the south wall threatened to collapse.
Julius called in the architect Bramante. For years, the two of them had been deliberating and had produced a project of unprecedented splendor. Now the world would see what man could do for the greater glory of God.
On February the 21st, 1506, demolition work began. 2 months later, Julius laid the first stone of the new building with his own hands. Paris de Grassis, papal master of ceremonies under Julius II, left a diary in which he described the event.
Saturday of Easter week, 1506. The Pope said he wanted to lay the first stone today of one of the four columns which are to sustain the choir, or rather the canopy, over the high altar of the Basilica of the Prince of the Apostles. A road had been set up with planks to allow for the descent down to the base of the column. But having seen the width and the depth, many people, including the Pope, feared to fall. So the Pope called out to those who were near the edge to move away. Not one cardinal went down with the Pope, apart from the two cardinal deacons who were in attendance. Some of the masons came down with us, and a goldsmith carrying 12 newly minted coins, or rather medals, the size of a mass host and the width of the blade of a common pencil sharpener. On one side of the medal was the image of Pope Julius with the inscription, Julius Ligurian, Sovereign Pontiff, third year of his pontificate, 1506. And on the other, there was the drawing of the church he wished to build, with these words, Installation of the Basilica of the Apostles, Peter and Paul, for Julius II, Sovereign Pontiff, and underneath, the word Vatican. Two of these coins were of gold, and the others of imitation gold, in a terracotta bowl.
Julius II had ascended the pontifical throne after one of the shortest conclaves ever, a single day. Even as a cardinal, he had enjoyed great prestige, and he was elected pope, we are told, without simony and amidst general applause. His reign was to be one of the most extraordinary in history.
Julius was the nephew of Sixtus IV and had an intimate knowledge of the workings of the papacy and the extent of papal authority. He believed that before reforming the church, he must guarantee the independence and security of the papal states, which on his accession were disintegrating. And with the French in Milan and the Spanish in Naples, Rome was in a vice.
Julius acted. He signed up Swiss mercenaries to drive the French from Italy, and in the bitter winter of 1510 donned armour himself and took to the field.
That a pope should have led an army into battle shocks and surprises the modern mind. But historians have excused Julius, explaining that he had no choice at a time when a man in Italy was forced to be either hammer or anvil, and when personality was the only key to power.
Julius had personality. He was a restless, strong-willed man with a powerful, original nature. Anger and goodwill alike came to the surface, and the Pontefice Terribile commanded universal respect.
Julius II was no scholar, but he supported the universities and collected a fine library. He patronized the arts for the glorification of the church and to make the center of Christendom the envy of all.
Rome is full of memories of Julius II, but perhaps the warrior pope would like best the living memorial familiar to every visitor to Vatican City, the Swiss Guards, a colourful reminder of a man who left his mark.
The programme was written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett.